Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now imagine going against every natural human instinct and taking the long and lonely walk towards a 1,000-kilogram bomb that you must defuse. Well, for my next guest, Ray Lane, this was simply part of an extraordinary 45-year career as a bomb disposal expert, former commanding officer of the Irish Defence Force Ordnance School, and as a wartime diplomat, he experienced the front line of conflicts in Bosnia, in Lebanon, Afghanistan and Ukraine, and it's all detailed in his new memoir called Only a Soldier Knows. And Ray is here with me in the studio. Ray, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Claire. Lovely to be here.
Great to have you with us. Now, in the book, you speak about this rude awakening that you had in the Curra back in 1973, yeah. In June of that year. That's when you joined the army. So you didn't know what you were in for.
Well, my mother wanted me to join the army. I certainly didn't want to join the army.
Did you not?
No, I worked in Trinity as a lab technician and I was a bit of a hippie. People today probably don't remember what a hippie was like.
Long hair.
Flower power and all the rest of it. And I wanted to abolish militaries, not join. And my mother got very concerned when I joined the Communist Party in Trinity.
Right.
And we had two army officers living either side of us.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, look, why couldn't you be like them?
And you followed her wishes, despite your beliefs at the time.
Women know best, I think, my wife tells me. So I did, yeah. And she applied. She put in the application.
Yeah.
And I went for the interview. Got on too well, obviously. Went in. And when I was getting my hair cut, the guy said to me, what way would you like your hair? And I said, just leave the locks and a bit of length at the back and just whipped it all off.
Right. And you quickly became used to the regime there, but you must have liked it, didn't you?
I loved it. I like a challenge. And I mentioned before that I had a hard upbringing at school, which really affected me. And anytime things come against me, I'd fight them.
Mm.
But I always realised that it was a game that we were playing, to see how good you were. And then if you passed all the tests, then you got commissioned.
But did you not struggle with the discipline of it then if you had a tough experience in school?
I did, at times. That'd be a question, going into your room, locking yourself into your room and just trying to reason this out.
Mm-hmm.
And then come. But the end goal was to get commissioned. And of course, the group of people I was working with, the cadet class, were fantastic.
You say you learned this lesson from somebody who trained your cadet class. You never do anything unless you know the reason why.
Yeah, and that's been with me throughout my life. Every Friday we get a lecture from the commanding officer and he'd always start with the reason why. You don't do something unless you know the reason why. And throughout my life, no matter where in the world I've been, home or abroad, I always like to know why I'm doing something.
Mm. But I would have thought certainly in the early days of being in the army that you did a lot of things without knowing why you were doing them. You just had to follow your orders.
I was kind of a rebel in a way, I suppose, a rebel without a cause. I mean, I would do as I was told, but I'd always have to have the reason why I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You went on then to train with the British Army.
We did. My family came over with me to England, to Kyneton in England, to do bomb disposal over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So why did you go to...
The British were seen as the Real Madrid of bomb disposal people, if you like. So, and we were struggling at that stage to develop our own capability. And we had to get up fast because of what was happening in Ireland. So I went over there and superb course.
Mm-hmm.
And I met some fantastic people. And we learned so much, which I was able to bring back to Ireland and get it in our own school then and build our standards up.
So were you coming back then and training our own with what you had learned over with Real Madrid?
With Real Madrid,
Commons. And you needed this knowledge and skill set because of the situation that was happening here in Northern Ireland.
We had to learn fast. I mean, in 1972 and 74... Claire, we had people going out to the streets of Dublin and Monaghan with no equipment. I mean, these were brave men. We had no robots. We had no equipment. They went out with motorbike helmets and toolkits. Phenomenal people.
Gosh, when you think about it, I mean, just imagine what that was like.
And never got the recognition they deserved, by the way. That's why this book I dedicated to these people.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to upskill fast. So we upskilled. And then we saw what the British were doing. And it was always my ambition then to get beyond the British, to try and make Ireland then the number one country. And I think we achieved that, as we've shown in Afghanistan. When the British withdrew from Kabul to Kandahar, they recommended the Irish take over from them in Kabul.
Because the skill set was at
they
such a level.
They saw where we were at, yeah.
But going back to the Troubles, you say and you mark the Troubles at the defining era of your early days, certainly in the Defence Forces.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you probably remember the presentation I gave on your show on the equipment that the IRA had developed.
Yes.
I mean, their techniques, their sophistication, unsurpassed. I don't admire their goals, but I have to admire their technology. And we had to match that, and we had to be better than that.
Mm.
We had to go better.
You always had to outsmart what you were dealing with, and that was a big challenge at the time.
Huge.
Mm-hmm. So
huge.
You learned a lot from that period then.
That's why, I suppose, when the British recommended us to go to Afghanistan, they knew how much we'd learned at that mm-hmm. stage.
So then what can you tell us about technological advancements, both on that side, on the bomb-making side, and then the equipment that you would have been using and training people to use?
Well, we developed our own robot called Hobo down in Cork. And in fact, interesting enough, there are two robot factories now based in Cork producing some of the best robots in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in Ukraine, I actually saw a calendar for the Ukrainian military with Irish robots on the calendar. And that really gave me some lift, I can tell you.
Yeah.
See our technology out there now.
So your first foreign tour then was
Lebanon.
Wasn't it? Gosh, in the news so much. I mean, we're talking about it every day here. But this was back in 1988.
That's right, yes.
And at that time, I spoke about the long walk then when I was introducing you.
Yeah.
You experienced that
at
that time.
I did. Even though it wasn't my portfolio, because I went out there just to monitor our equipment, service our equipment and look after our ammunition. But it turned out that the people who were responsible for bomb disposal in the UN had gone home. So we had a
step up, Ray.
And you're right. We had to do. I had to do the long walk with no suit.
Well, now describe it to me. What happened?
Well, we assessed. There was a bomb buried into a wall, which the Irish guys had spotted. So I had to work out, you know, the danger area. Was it targeting the Irish? And was there any possibility of a secondary device? So I blew my way up using explosive, right up to the paint tin, which was full of explosive. Dismantled that slowly.
How?
With my hands, I'm afraid. I just worked out how they put it together, and I just removed the detonator, removed the paint tin full of explosives.
But every time you're moving your hand in to do something else, you're saying to yourself, this could go.
But before I do that, Claire, I'm back at the base with my guys, my team, and we've got it on a blackboard, and we're going through every single procedure that we're going to do and what could happen. Worst case, best case, most likely.
Okay, so before you take a step, you've done all of this work
beforehand. As best you can.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as I got over the wall then, I saw white tape on the ground, and I was actually using white insulating tape that day. And I was about to pick it up when I felt the tape in my combats.
So you said, that's not my tape.
And I looked down and I could see it had been dug out perfectly.
So what did that mean?
There was a pressure plate there. So when the guys had survived, or whoever survived that attack, had gone over the wall, they would have stood in this and the survivors would have been got.
So you hadn't planned for that when you were doing your blackboard work. So what do you do now?
Back to the blackboard. Right. I tell the guys what I've seen. We what's known as a soak time. You allow it settle. You allow your mind settle. You come up with a plan. You go back up and you render it safe again.
Mm-hmm. So are you learning all the time how to handle decisions, how to make decisions under extreme pressure?
Yes, always. Yeah, that is. And when I'm testing students, we put them under extreme pressure to see how they react to it. We might put them under pressure for 16 hours or longer. Mm-hmm. See how they react to it.
See, we know about it a bit of this because we hear about the Armour Ranger training from various books that have been written by people who've been through it. It's very tough.
It's tough. No, it is tough, but it's very rewarding, Claire. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been very fortunate. We've had a few incidents over the years, but in general, our people are highly professional. They are highly, they're as good, if not better than anything out there.
So it sounds as though you loved that part of the work. So
I did.
Was it a difficult decision for you when you thought, I need to move on now? Or what prompted the decision?
I should have stopped years before, but we had a shortage of officers, so I kept going. But then one day in Dublin, we had a pipe bomb under a car. And you know the ad for Specsavers? This would be a great ad for Specsavers. I couldn't see through the suit.
Right.
I just knew it was over.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back and my sergeant said to me, I think it's all finished, is it? And I said, it surely is.
Right.
That's the end of it.
So were you not using the robot at that time?
They had placed the device so I couldn't get the arm of the robot in.
Ah, so they were starting to learn from what you knew.
But we went back then and we thought about it and we put a brush handle on the arm of the robot with a device on it and got it in.
Right. Such a rudimentary way of dealing with
innovation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was your at that stage you decided
it's over.
You were gone. Now, I mentioned you were at the front line of conflicts in Lebanon, Afghanistan, Ukraine, but Bosnia in 1992 is when your diplomatic skills were used to best effect.
Yeah. The hardest mission of all.
Really?
Yeah. Nothing matches Bosnia. Nothing. Nothing. Not even Ukraine today. Bosnia was on a level which I hope never to see again. The butchery and the savagery and the sights you would see on a daily basis are just horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
Horrendous. And I kept copious notes out there, detailed diaries, which I rarely did, in the hope that someday these people would be brought to justice. And then the war crime, ICTY, the war crimes tribunal came up. And I was delighted to give the opportunity, even though it was horrendous, to give evidence against some of these people.
Yeah, but again, when you're in that situation, because of Ireland's position, you're treading a very fine line.
You are, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But wrong is wrong, Claire. And if I see things which I deem to be wrong out there, and it was an awful lot wrong, I mean, I just noted everything. And in fact, I would often say to the perpetrator, will you sign what I've written there, please? Because they'd no fear of any court or anything.
And they would sign it.
And they'd sign it.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see Ireland today in the domain of security and defence, Ray?
Well, I support neutrality 100%. Well, but it has to be a neutrality which is financed, resourced with the right. I mean, having one ship available on the west coast of Ireland, just really terrible. We need to resource it. But I often say the most important thing that I had overseas was the Irish flag. And I tell a quick story where I was doing ceasefire arrangements up in central Bosnia for 6 days, 16 hours a day. And a guy eventually turned around to me and he said, Mr. Lane, you're not here for us. And I said, why am I here? And he said, you're here to make money.
Right.
And I said, would you mind telling me how much money I'm making so? And he said, 400 Deutschmarks a day back then. I said, really? I said, well, I'm making 40 Deutschmarks a day. And out of that, I have to feed myself and listen to you. And then they got it.
They got it.
We're not a superpower.
Yes.
We're not, you know, we're no hidden agendas.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going behind people's typing stuff and sending it back to their capital.
And there's a huge value in that.
You can't put a figure on it.
All right. Well, Ray, listen, we have to leave it there. But it's a great pleasure to talk to you. And congratulations on the book, which is out now. You're launching it tonight. It's called Only a Soldier Knows by Ray Lane, who's a retired lieutenant colonel with the Irish Defence Forces.